Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back. Do you like receiving letters, perhaps packages in the mail? Well, you're going to love this episode. We're talking about the Grumman LLV, the humble mail truck with a checkered reputation. We're going to be talking about postal workers, shouts out to the USPS. We're going to talk about the torture tests that they put this truck through to make sure that it can handle being a post service truck.
11,000 miles on a dirt road. Have you ever taken your car on that torture test? I think not.
Also, we ate some kangaroo meat. So, welcome back.
Let's jump into it. Grumman LLV.
It's hard to envision America operating without one of its greatest institutions, the United States Postal Service. One of the only government agencies to have its own clause in the Constitution, the Postal Service has been connecting people across America before America was even fully America. And that's not even to mention their 2003 hit, Such Great Heights, which remains a classic 2000s mixtape staple. While initially most mail was delivered by foot or the Pony Express, eventually the USPS had to get with the times and find a vehicle to ensure quick and reliable delivery all across the country. For the last 40 years, this vehicle has been inescapable on the roads of America. I'm referring, of course, to the official USPS mail truck, also known as the Grumman Long Life Vehicle. The Grumman LLV has been in service since 1986, still tending to the postal needs of millions of Americans every single day, despite its less than stellar reputation. These days, it is now more known for being technologically behind the times, as well as intensely frustrating to drive. And when the USPS lets these trucks stay on the road years past their life expectancy date, they also become something else. Spontaneously combusting death traps. So, how did a truck that gets roughly 9 miles per gallon with no air conditioning outlast generation after generation of superior vehicles? Was this mail truck actually meant to have a long life, or was it doomed from the start? And now that USPS has finally begun to decommission the LLV, what's next for the future of postal delivery? This week on Past Gas, it's the history of the Grumman LLV mail truck. Bart, I think your toddler's going to... Or he's not a toddler anymore.
No, he's...
What comes
he's 26.
He's, yeah.
He's 26.
He's a little shaver, you'd call him.
I think he's going to love this episode. Does Ollie like mail trucks?
Mail trucks, garbage trucks, recycling trucks, yard waste trucks.
Hell yeah.
They're all garbage trucks.
You know what I realized? Like, because my baby likes watching cars and stuff. And I was like, why as like young boys do we get into... trucks, watches, magic was the thing that made me realize it. Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
I was like, I think guys just like mechanical things that have stats, mm-hmm. that have a bunch of different variety.
That you could argue endlessly over.
You can have argue preference. About it. You can battle them, yeah. and you can fix them, and you can upgrade them.
Yeah.
Like that. You.
There's a
you
world get, you with find, rules that you can own.
Yes, yeah. and it's not just little boys, like little girls as well, or whatever.
or whatever, to punctuate yeah. that point.
But I think I figured out the equation of how to make something successful and big and market it. You just have to like Pokemon, same yes. thing. You have a Pikachu who has specific stats, can like mm-hmm. fit into the lightning electricity
yeah.
mold. You can upgrade him, you can fight him. Anything that you can figure fit into that formula will be a huge hit with
little
kids.
I didn't know the rules at all of the Pokemon trading card game growing up. I just liked the pictures, you know?
I thought we were going to go into a deep dive about how you lost your fledgling fortune.
No,
I don't know. I was in over my head with Pokemon, didn't know the rules.
I didn't know the rules of the game.
Then the bottom fell out and I was asked out.
I don't know where my Pokemon. I hope my mom still has them somewhere. I don't know. I'm going to be so pissed if she doesn't. Welcome back to the show, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. This is Past Gas. I'm joined this week by Bart Bidlingmeyer across the table from me, rocking the Sword t-shirt. I said that
the
weird.
The S word. It's all right.
The S word?
Yeah. It's That's not. What no, call- it's not.
It's the sword. The sword, yes. And Joe Weber.
What's up, Wink Wink Nation? Me and Bart actually, we knew each other before Donut, but I think the first day that I showed up, we were both wearing sword shirts.
No, that's not how it worked. There was one. No, there was one week. You'd been here for a while. It was a couple months. And Joe and I, like, you know, you had the ubiquitous black donut shirt with the white letters.
The uniform back in
the
day.
And Joe and I wore it on the same day. And then we had a second donut shirt. This was back when you had two options. one of them was gray with a little bit of yellow. And, the white with the black lettering hadn't quite taken form yet. Certainly there were no buff horses to choose from.
No.
Anyways, and the next day Joe and I wore the same shirt and we were kind of like, all right, this is kind of silly. So then Joe and I were like, hey, tomorrow wear the black donut shirt with the white letters again. So they did. And so then the next day, so I really love this band and I really love this shirt. So as it was starting to wear out, I got two more because you never know when they'll disappear.
Yeah.
So anyways, so I had a stockpile of sword shirts. So I was like, Joe, tomorrow I'm going to bring. So then I went in, we met in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I went in first in my sword shirt. And, you know, I was, you know, typing at the at that little table. And then Joe comes in with his sword shirt, which he had never worn because he didn't own.
So I'm misremembering this all these years.
I think you've been misremembering. But then people were like,
come on.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know. And he didn't. And then I forget what we did Friday.
So then the fifth day, I was like, Bart, I'm going to go to Michael's. It was right around the corner. And I got two quad XL blank Gildan heavy tees.
And I
got something like a specific thing
it
from
was
Michael's.
Like a lotus. It was like a print that had like a lotus flower and like a butterfly.
Yeah.
Like no one, first of all, no one in their right mind would wear that anyway.
It was iron on patches or prints. Yeah. And I ironed them on at my house and I was like, all right, Bart, like tomorrow, let's meet in the parking lot. I'll give you the quad XL Gildan. We can come in doing this, that like the end. The fifth day of this dumb joke that we've been doing every day, and show up, was texting him like, all right, he's not answering. What's going on? And then I was like, all right, fuck it. Like, I got to go to work. I'll just give him the shirt when I see him or whatever. It'll still be really funny. And so I walk in wearing a quad XL shirt and everyone's like, what the hell? What are you doing? Like, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he still was not answering. I was like slacking him. I was like, come on, Bart. It's not going to work if I'm the only one wearing this huge, stupid shirt. And then you were in meetings all morning or something and you completely forgot. And so you walked out and you're like, oh, yeah. And so then I had to just wear this quad XL shirt all day. And I was like, do you want? You want the one I made for you? And you're like, I got stuff to do.
Didn't you guys also have like a weird shirt with like a monkey riding a bicycle or something on it? It had like a big triangle on the front.
I don't know, but I love how this is taking on
Dude, it was hilarious.
A new chapter in the minds of every individual who's there.
Yeah. Man, that was really funny though. That week was great. That is a fond memory of mine. This week we're talking about the Grumman LLV, the ubiquitous white male truck. If you are not
if you are a white male, you probably drive one of these trucks.
It's the cis truck.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If you don't live in the United States, it's a pretty funky looking little truck. Geometric is how I would describe it.
Boxy.
They really only have one function. I've never seen them be used for any other sort of like government service or anything like that. It's all just to deliver the mail.
Yeah, for my whole life. I mean, it started in 1986 when I was born, and they're just now getting phased out. So if you look at me and you're like, wow, he's a little worse for wear. Imagine me as a truck.
I've always wanted to buy one of these and put like off-road suspension on it or something like that.
They rarely come up for sale. And I think they're pretty like the people that run ice cream trucks are usually the first to jump in and buy them.
I don't get that. It's like police cars go up for sale all the time. You can buy surplus military vehicles. You can buy like if you wanted to impersonate a figure of authority, you could do that legally and readily available. We're not trying to be postmen out here.
No, I just want to. That's truck. Why they're so coveted.
I don't know.
This is my theory, and I have the advantage of like reading the script beforehand. But government efficiency is not great, and things get wrapped up in bureaucracy, and it takes forever for any change to happen.
Yeah,
and so I think just out of convenience, they've been using these forever. So because of that, they keep repairing them, and that I think is the reason that. There's just not a lot of them for sale.
They don't
sale.
Go for sale because they're not letting go of them.
Yes.
Right. It's like what the irony is that it's if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
But
like they are all broken. So maybe you should have fixed it. Right.
And it like when I was a kid, I was like, oh, it'd be really cool to be a postal service guy. What am I just talking to the mailman?
My one of my friends, Taylor, he was a mailman up in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah.
That was like one of his first jobs out of college. He entered the Postal Service and he really loved doing it. At first, you start in the mail room, I think, sorting mail and whatever, but you can choose to kind of move up to or, you know, move laterally to be a mail delivery person. Yeah. And like he loved it because you walk around all day and you learn all your neighborhoods. It was great because him and his wife had just moved up there. So he like learned the area super fast because of that. And I think he worked there for like 10 years. Dude, shouts out to the Postal Service, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's a crazy.
Thankless job.
It really is. And like, sometimes you go to some post offices and they're just, you look behind the counter and it's like,
oh God,
so unorganized. And you're like, what is happening? How is this going to, but I don't worry about the mail.
No.
You know, it's just like, I put it in the box and it shows up the next week. Like, despite, you know, they have a lot of budgetary issues. You know, I think they're pretty shorthanded sometimes, but despite all that, the mail still gets delivered, and I think that's worthy of admiration. And thank you to all the postal workers out there. Maybe you're listening to this right now at the job. Thank you very much.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now back to the show.
Ooh, let's do a little rodent snack right now because I'm feeling a little peckish.
Should we call it a mail delivery snack? Like as you're out delivering the mail?
Oh,
all day?
Yeah.
Or just a special?
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that.
Okay.
But I think it might.
It's very similar. It's like a super slow road trip every day.
Yeah, every day. let's do a little.
And you wind up where you came from.
Yeah.
Joe, what is our mail
Bart,
delivery
snack? Do you
want to
do the honors?
Week?
Well, let's see it.
Oh. Oh,
it's space ice cream, but brown.
It's
jerky. Oh, God. Kangaroo jerky. Pepper kangaroo jerky.
So this is
oak
barrel jerky, kangaroo meat.
from the LA Zoo.
It's from Arizona, Lake Havasu.
Lake Havasu?
Yeah. My mom got me this maybe like 6 months ago. She got me a bunch of jerky, and this was the weirdest one, so.
Okay.
You want to try it first?
Sure.
Good day, mate.
Nolan is of the mindset that jerky is the ultimate road trip snack.
I am.
I kind of bought this to be like, maybe this is not the jerky to be the ultimate snack, but it could be good. I've never had kangaroo before.
Yeah. I'm wondering, I have never had possum. I bet that would be a good
possum jerky.
Yeah. Like kangaroo's weird, but like I'd eat any jerky. But
I was going to say that jerky with a lot of fat content is probably good, probably better than lean.
Interesting scent.
But I like turkey jerky, and that's pretty lean.
You ever had ostrich?
Uh-huh.
It's very good. That's a jerk. There's a lot of good jerky here in Southern California.
It has a bit of like a raisin hint to it. Raisiny.
You have some sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. It's peppered.
I'm tasting plum. Are you guys getting a little bit of plum?
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's a little tough.
You're good.
I mean, it's good. Flavor-wise, everything's good. I'm just thinking about that. Thinking that it's a kangaroo. That's all I can think about. Is it?
Oh, it's also expired. Oopsies.
I mean, it's jerky.
Expired in June.
Okay.
Maybe I'm going to stop eating it. But it's...
I don't think it was sealed.
Yeah, it was sealed.
Come on.
It tastes fine.
If this had gone bad, we'd know.
Yeah, that's fair.
We will know in a little bit.
So, if there's a new plague, we are patient zero.
Which one of us, I guess you ate it first. You'd be zero, you'd be one, and I'd be two. Which is weird. Could there be three patients? You know, it should say there's three patients, but then zero's one.
I'm just thinking about that poor kangaroo hopping around with his boxing gloves on.
Well, they only use Joey's.
Oh,
really?
Because once they get past one, the meat's too... I'm just kidding. No, this is not a baby.
It's all right. I mean, it's like any other jerky. It's great, great snack. If you're if you're walking around delivering mail,
yeah, you know,
consider that.
What's your rating from 1 to 10?
8 out of 10.
8?
Yeah, wow. That's pretty good.
Okay. It's as far as jerky goes, it's pretty good. It's a little tough.
Tough, but that might have to do with the expiration date.
If it's
not a fan of the mold,
we just all start just like tripping. Like,
yeah, one piece was enough for me, so I'm gonna give it like a 6.5.
I just can't. I think I have a problem with eating kangaroos, honestly.
Whoa,
I'm trying not to think about it too much.
Yeah,
and
they're assholes, by the way.
I don't care, they're cute.
Yeah,
yeah, cows are too. Pigs are cute too.
Yeah.
Pigs are very cute.
Yeah, where do you draw the line? That's that PETA ad.
Yeah.
What about you, Bart?
I'm having trouble ranking it as kangaroo jerky. It's a pretty good sweet teriyaki jerky. I would like to taste. This sounds horrible. I'd like to taste more of the kangaroo. Just because, like, this could easily be beef jerky, the way it's seasoned.
It doesn't really differentiate.
You know, and I would like to know, what am I paying for? Yeah. Or what is Mama Weber paying for?
I agree.
Is what I'd like.
I agree.
You know, what we'll be paying for later is eating expired beef jerky.
Yeah.
Paying for it on the toilet.
Let's make sure, yeah.
With our buttholes.
Okay. You guys get what I'm driving at?
You guys get what I'm...
No. I get it. I'm picking up where you're stepping.
All right, quick. 1 to 10.
I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
Okay.
It's jerky.
Yeah. You know what? It wasn't that good. I'm downgrading.
I wouldn't go out of my way to get kangaroo jerky.
Yeah, 6 as well for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I lived in Australia, kangaroo jerky all day.
So average of 6.125.
All right. Middle of the road. Okay. Let's talk about the Grumman LLV. In the first part of the 20th century, as the United States Post Office became more of a unified organization, a consistent delivery vehicle became a necessity. By the end of World War II, post-war booms in business, employment, and retail fueled an unprecedented increase in mail volume. This meant that the Post Office was finally able to purchase over 3,000 new trucks. And so, in 1953, the DJ-3A Jeep was selected as the first official mail delivery vehicle.
DJ-3A Jeep in the house.
All right. Manufactured by Willys, the Jeep DJ, better known as the Dispatcher, was both inexpensive and customizable, with both two- and four-wheel drive options, as well as a soft top, metal top, and sliding door options to choose from. Powered by a Willys-built Go Devil 2.2-liter four-cylinder engine, it was underpowered for just about anything other than cruising slowly down suburban streets. Upon its debut, the Jeep DJ was poised as, quote, perfect for economical deliveries, even including a right-side driver's position for easy mailbox access. The Dispatcher remained the official mail delivery vehicle from 1955 to 1984, going through a variety of manufacturing tweaks and parent companies. But while the mail Jeep made delivery more efficient, the vehicles were having trouble keeping up with demand. America was growing at a rapid rate, and so too were the delivery routes themselves. In order to service the ever-expanding suburban sprawl that was sprouting up around the country, a new vehicle was required to handle these longer routes and additional cargo. Eventually, the post office, now rebranded as the Postal Service, made a wish list of updates that would be included in their new mail delivery vehicle design. Their first priority was a durable and weatherproof body. It also had to have easy access to the cargo area for mail carriers of all shapes and sizes. Most importantly, USPS needed a truck that could, quote, run 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, month after month, year after year.
Yeah, I want a mail body that can run that.
Yeah.
Too. You're looking at it, baby.
And so with this wish list, USPS reached out to a number of manufacturing companies to commission possible prototypes. By 1985, they had settled on three potential competitors, all of which were invited to Laredo, Texas, to endure a grueling gauntlet of tests. The three competing companies were American Motors, Pavico, an offshoot of the Fruhauf Trailer Corporation, and an unexpected competitor, the Grumman Aerospace Corporation. Looking back, it's strange to see Grumman's name on the design of a civilian vehicle, a car nonetheless. Grumman had produced some of the most iconic military aircraft of the 20th century, including the F-6F Hellcat, a fighter plane that shot down more enemies in World War II than any other plane, and the F-14 Tomcat, which was made immortal in the classic film Top Gun. So,
yow! Yow! Right?
No.
Yeah. You're thinking of CSI, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Horacio.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, now I'm on board. Yeah. Joe was right.
So why the hell was a high-powered aerospace corporation desperately trying to produce a simple little mail truck?
Money.
Yeah. Don't spoil it, Joe.
Sorry. We'll be right back after these messages.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now back to the show.
Formed in 1919, the Grumman Aerospace Corporation was best known for their naval cat models like the F-4F Wildcat and aforementioned F-6F Hellcat. During World War II, their torpedo bomber, the TBF Avenger, was perhaps the most essential military aircraft. But Grumman didn't just produce fighter jets. They also produced the original civilian Gulfstream business aircrafts and were the chief contractors for the Apollo lunar module, ironically one of which was the Apollo 13, and acted as a lifeboat safety net when the main spacecraft malfunctioned. After conducting steady business through multiple wars in the space race, Grumman's contracts were gradually drying up. This caused them to look into other manufacturing options, which led them to the Postal Service. By the end of the 70s, they began work on potential mail truck replacement that would change the game forever. And that's how in 1979, we ended up with USPS's first ever electric vehicle, the Curbwatt.
Curbwatt.
The Curbwatt was conceived during the gas crisis when many manufacturers were scrambling to find alternative ways of fueling their vehicles. Grumman designed the Curbwatt with the promise of helping save the USPS 500,000 gallons of gas per year. But unfortunately, this EV was a bit too ahead of its time and could not meet the demands of an average postal route with its limited range of 40 miles. In the end, only 50 of them were ever produced, 40 of which were dispatched to various postal offices in need of additional vehicles, though they were only sparingly used. Grumman took the lessons they had learned from the Curbwatt and came back with a second prototype, an EV version of the Curb van model from the early 60s. But with the gas crisis now in the rearview mirror, this slower model was far less appealing than it had been just a couple years prior. Once again, both Grumman and USPS went back to the drawing board, which brings us back to Laredo, Texas.
In 1985, Grumman brought their updated design to Laredo under the new moniker of the Long Life Vehicle. Their first change in the design was to ditch the EV drivetrain, as it was proven the technology just wasn't ready to compete. Then they sought out the help of General Motors, who had assisted in the production of many of their fighter planes during World War II through GM's Eastern Aircraft Division. The new design was split between the companies, with Grumman manufacturing the body and General Motors providing the chassis. This particular chassis was the same one GM had previously used for the Chevy S10 pickup truck. The body is made from corrosion-resistant aluminum, resulting in a relatively light 3,000-pound vehicle that can carry about 1,000 pounds of cargo.
That's pretty
impressive.
I didn't realize it was a truck chassis. I thought, like, remembering it as, like, it was still on the DJ platform, but it was, you know, like, with the Iron Duke engine, whatever.
Dude, this would be a sick drag car.
there was one at Hollyfest.
Oh, really?
Really?
LS swapped. Yeah.
That's sick.
Oh, my God.
Alongside the other competing vehicles, the Grumman LLV was put through a rigorous series of drills by the USPS team. Here is the official list of vehicle tests provided by the Smithsonian National Postal Museum. Task 1, drive 5,760 miles on a closed loop, 5-mile-long paved road at 50 to 55 miles per hour. 2, drive 11,520 miles over a gravel road at 30 to 45 miles per hour. Drive 2,880 miles over a road with a shoulder, stopping every 250 feet and accelerating to 15 miles per hour in between. This must have been so boring.
Yeah. But it's also the only one that says closed loop was the 5-mile long paved closed loop. Like the other ones, where are you going?
I don't know.
You just got to find an 11,520 mile.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Then they had to drive over cobblestones, hit potholes at 10 to 14 miles per hour, haul a 1-ton load. During 1.5 of the road test, haul a man in a 400-pound bag. During 1/2 of the road test, drive over potholes again.
Wait a minute, haul a man. That just mean a person in the truck,
yeah.
Or is this like Indiana Jones style guy on a whip with a 400-pound bag on his shoulder, like
it's Santa
Claus behind? Yeah, yeah
they
behind
had to drive over truck. Potholes. And hit a pothole 35,000 times with each wheel. This is awesome. this looks like fun, actually. The gravel road test would be sick. Sliding that thing out.
This absolutely proves that it is more fun to drive a slow vehicle fast.
Oh, absolutely.
That looks so fun.
Though the other competing vehicles held their own in these tests, in the end, the sturdy reliability of the Grumman LLV won out and obtained the official USPS vehicle contract. Let's f-ing go.
Following the Laredo tests, USPS ordered 99,000 LLVs at a cost of $11,651 per vehicle, a contract totaling at $1.1 billion, the largest production order in USPS's history.
Wow.
The contract gave Grumman a chance to double its size and staff as the focus shifted entirely to LLV production. The vehicles were produced in the Grumman plant in Montgomery, Pennsylvania, from 1986 until 1994. During the height of production, the plant was producing around 100 LLVs per day. Attempting to live up to their name, these long-life vehicles were given a life expectancy of about 24 years. I wonder how they landed on that number, Bart.
Looks like somebody's gotta put it in the mail.
Yeah! For our audio listeners, Bart just put on a pair of sunglasses.
Like now.
Yeah.
Soon the LLVs became immediately ubiquitous across the country as they replaced the dispatcher jeeps and sped up mail delivery by a wide margin, mainly because of the expansive cargo space.
I mean, you got more room, you can move more mail.
It's simple.
Simple math.
But although the USPS was pleased with these new vehicles, there were numerous flaws with the design from the get-go. The Grumman's windowless cargo area restricted visibility for drivers, not to mention the vehicles lacked both airbags and air conditioning.
Damn.
And due to the stop and start nature of postal routes, the LLVs could only muster around 8 to 10 miles per gallon.
Not great.
Then there was the engine, the Iron Duke, a four-cylinder cast iron pushrod engine that was introduced in 1977, making it already quite outdated by the time it was used for the LLV. According to GM auto parts specialists, the Iron Duke was, quote, born from oil shortages and government standards that demanded cleaner vehicles. So it's basically just a malaise era.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Pontiac, right? It was used
it was
in the
GM, but they used it in the Fiero.
They used it a lot of stuff.
When they shortened the oil pan to fit it under the back and then killed cars.
That's when it started on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. oil got too hot.
Yep, everything got too hot.
Yeah. Most infamously, it is the engine underneath the hood of both the 1982 Iron Duke Camaro, widely remembered as, quote, one of the worst cars of all time, as well as the 1984 Pontiac Fiero, whose small oil reservoir led to consistent engine failure, like we're talking about. Regardless of these flaws, USPS and its carriers were pleased with the initial LLV trucks, especially as the shift from the analog 80s to the digital retail boom of the 90s made significant use of the additional cargo space. But as the new millennium approached, these once state-of-the-art vehicles were already showing their age. The LLV ceased production in 1994. Despite the second wind USPS had given Grumman in the 80s, the company failed to stay afloat, eventually merging with fellow aircraft manufacturer Northrop once the contract was fulfilled.
Oh, Northrop Grumman.
Just down the street here, El Segundo.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a huge headquarters there.
With the initial fleet of LLVs approaching their life expectancy expiration date at the turn of the century, USPS began talks to find a sufficient replacement. While designs and plans were considered, a new vehicle never materialized. Mm-hmm. We talked about this in the wheelhouse a while ago, where they just couldn't get their shit together. They tried to have kind of one of these contests to be like, design us a new one.
Grumman
we'll pay
did,
you an exposure. No, the USPS. But when 2018 came and went, and there were still tens of thousands of LLVs past their prime, still on the road with no replacement plan in place, it was becoming clear that something was wrong. So what did LLV delivery trucks do when they were left on the road too long? Simple. They began to explode.
Yeah, let's get into this. In 2020, Vice published an article about the bizarre amount of LLVs that had recently and spontaneously burst into flames. One mail carrier in Arizona had been on the road for about 10 miles when his LLV's engines abruptly shut off. He was able to pull the vehicle off the road and call his supervisor. As he surveyed what had happened and stood beside his truck, he heard a whoosh noise emanate from under the hood. Within seconds, the entire truck was on fire.
That's what happened to Newman in Seinfeld.
As of the publishing date of the Vice article, over 400 mail trucks had burst into flames between the years 2014 and 2020. In over 100 cases, the trucks were so thoroughly destroyed that the investigators were unable to identify a probable fire cause. Of the remaining 300 or so LLVs where the investigators could identify a likely cause, the only pattern they could find was that there was no pattern.
Huh?
As more and more investigations took place, USPS was stunned to find no rhyme or reason to these explosions other than the fact that these trucks were comically past their life expectancy date. It didn't matter the circumstances, cities or rural areas, hot or cold weather, day or night, even whether or not the vehicles had been properly serviced, nothing could keep them from setting themselves on fire. Of course, this wasn't a shock to anyone who had been paying attention. A July 2015 newsletter from the NALC Region 7, covering North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, contained a section on the dangers of melting USPS vehicles. But since the LLV had been tested and produced to last longer than the average vehicles on the road, USPS was able to get away without replacing them for much longer than anyone initially anticipated.
And just a side note, the NALC, as we all know, is the National Association of Letter Carriers.
There you go.
I didn't know that.
But now, things were different. As more and more news outlets reported on the burnt-out LLV carcasses, USPS had to finally concede that they could no longer, in good conscience, keep these vehicles on the road. Shortly after the Vice article, a plan for a replacement vehicle contract was finally fast-tracked. While the LLVs were exploding all across America, initial plans for the next-generation delivery vehicle began around 2015. USPS's wish list for this new vehicle design included basic updates like air conditioning and airbags, as well as a life expectancy, a shorter one this time, of 12 to 20 years. In 2017, a Laredo-esque prototype competition was held at the Transportation Research Center in East Liberty, Ohio. The manufacturers in consideration included AM General, Carsan, Mahindra, Workhorse VT, and Oshkosh Ford.
I didn't realize that Mahindra was in the race for that. We've talked about Mahindra a couple times on the main channel. It's an Indian car company.
I was going to say Mahindra's huge. It's kind of like Mitsubishi, like also is Three Diamonds Tuna.
Yeah. From what I remember, they make a bunch of kind tractors. Of underpowered SUVs, tractors too.
A lot of tractors.
Okay. Right.
And they're taking, there's a lot. I was surprised. My brother lives in Hershey and I was driving out to visit him. There's like Mahindra dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
They make that much, and I guess they're that good, and they have that much of a foothold now.
Yeah, I know people swear by them.
Yeah.
Though the initial next-generation delivery vehicle prototypes appear to be promising, the tests themselves proved to be a failure, with the vehicles experiencing, quote, critical safety failures during the prototype testing phase, including brake failure and leaking fuel tanks.
Uh-oh.
The real issue with these tests lay solely in the hands of the USPS officials who commissioned all the prototypes, as the manufacturers were not given sufficient time to get their vehicles ready.
They didn't drive on a 470,000 dirt road.
It all reeked of a quick way to cover their bases due to the increasingly public issues the LLVs were having. The testing continued well into the next decade, as the last standing manufacturers attempting to perfect their designs. Eventually, Oshkosh was the standout option, obtaining the massive USPS contract in 2021. After a few delays, the NGDV finally began replacing LLVs on the road in the summer of 2024, this year, beginning in Augusta, Georgia.
Augusta.
May Augusta, Georgia.
Augusta, Georgia. Why did I think Augusta? Oh, it was fun. It was fun.
It's always like the defense contractors that win out in the end. I wonder why.
Soon it'll be Tesla, thanks to the
oh my god.
The Oshkosh NGDV was derived from the Ford Transit commercial van, now with expanded cargo space and better rear visibility. According to Car and Driver, the NGDV is, quote, not only safer and literally cooler, but it also features a 360-degree camera system, front and rear parking sensors, and a myriad of other upgrades that make the life of the mail carrier more enjoyable.
Yeah, dude, it's 2024. Put AC in the truck, you know?
Put AC in a dang truck. So this was all proven to be true with the initial rollouts, as one mail carrier told the Associated Press that the air conditioning in his truck, quote, felt like heaven blowing in my face.
I love it. It's also like, yeah, that's AC.
That's what
you've just never had it. It's just it. Yes,
did you guys have
air
heaven blowing in my face.
Yeah, yeah.
You have heaven
it comes
blowing
into
in my
Sentra
face every day.
Well, I mean, poor carriers, dude. That sucks. Sometimes you see like when it's 110 degrees in LA, and they're just like, and there's a tiny little fan,
I know,
and they're dressed like safari.
It's gnarly, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So seriously, dude. It's a really thankless job. One drawback to the NGDV, though, is entirely aesthetic, with many critics calling the truck a tremendous eyesore with its bulkier size and cartoon-like shape.
Whatever.
One reviewer likened its design to being a vehicle from Despicable Me,
which
is awesome.
You shouldn't be a mail truck reviewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go write another vlog, asshole. You. This is awesome.
Yeah.
It really is. You look at it. I think it looks cool because it's so ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Mail truck should be ridiculous.
It's awesome. Yeah. So, regardless of this new truck's reputation as an ugly duckling, what matters most is that mail carriers are loving their new vehicles, especially now that there's much less chance of them bursting into flames. The USPS appears
but
to have...
there's always a chance.
There's always
fingers
a
crossed.
Chance. There's always a chance.
Honestly, I need all of those like HelloFresh things that end up in my mailbox to just catch fire and never end up in my mailbox again.
The USPS appears to have learned their lesson following their procrastination in replacing the LLV. Look, I've been there. I procrastinate all the time. I'm trying to get better at it. The NGDV is far more customizable than the initial LLV design, meaning that the gradual shift to an EV model will be far easier to implement. This current fleet of Oshkosh NGDVs is expected to grow to over 60,000 vehicles within the next few years. I still have not seen one. I want to see one. I will cheer when I see one.
Yeah.
As the American public relies less and less on the post office, it's hard to say if this NGDV will ever reach the same iconic status as the LLV. Dude, it's already iconic.
It's already there, man. It's
already there. It's a classic. But it's definitely safe to say that the streets of this country will be far safer with this new fleet of delivery trucks taken over. The humble LLV served a vital role in the history of the Postal Service and perhaps this very country. It provided a way for delivery to expand across the country in ways nobody could even imagine 30 years prior. But it also taught the USPS a crucial lesson in listening to their own advice and abiding by their own vehicle's life expectancy. Somewhere out there, one final LLV will burst into flames by the side of a rural road marking the end of an era of a game-changing and iconic vehicle that in no way will be missed. Wow, that's harsh. I'll miss it. I will miss the LLV.
It's very distinct.
It's very distinct. Yeah. Dude, I was looking at that the LS swapped one.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at the back with, like, the two rows of, like, a million brake and turn signal lights on the back, I've always loved that. It just I don't know. I love it. I love the LLV.
It's of an era.
It's a very much of an era.
What's crazy is they said they stopped in 94.
They stopped making them in 94.
Literally the youngest LLV
is 30 years old. That's nuts.
Yeah.
So even the youngest one is staying on the road 7 years longer than they expected. We have some listener mail today, as we do every day.
Yes, we do.
Hey, fellas. Congrats, Nolan.
Thank you. thank you.
At the end of the Big Three app, you mentioned a modded mail truck, and 2 weeks ago I made a shit post about a Grumman LLV Pikes Peak build on Blue Sky.
Hey,
shout out to fellow Blue Sky user Nolan Sykes.
Yeah, I'm on there.
It was exactly what I was picturing in my head. The sketch blew me away. I ended up buying it to frame it.
Oh wow,
let's take a look at it real quick.
That's pretty cool. Huh.
Oh, it's sick. Real aggressive. Definitely Pikes Peak-esque.
You see the cooling fans in the back?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go follow this guy, Nathaniel, at ndh111.bsky.social. So keep shitposting your dreams into reality. Please build this for Pike's Peak. Thanks, Pete Kozolinski, for writing in. If you want to write some fan mail or talk crap about us, passgas@donutmedia.com. Write into us yourself, and we might read it on air.
Thank you, Pete, for liking my posts. I definitely recognize your username.
Nice.
Followed by James Adomian.
You guys should look up the...
I'll follow back. There's
a Mercedes turbo diesel swap from a officially gassed.
Oh, wow.
Looks
officially
unreal.
Gassed.
I feel like I have like bean husk.
Oh, yeah. This thing's sick as hell. Bean husk.
Oh, on your...
Yeah. I feel like it's just like stuck to my uvula.
I feel like I got bean husk on my uvula. I gotta tell you something, guys. I got bean husk on my uvula right now. I'm not in a good mood.
Whoa, this one is even
more
aggressive.
Joe's got a bean husk on his uvula.
Yeah! All right. We'll see you next
that'll
week.
That'll do it. Follow Bart at Bids Bardo. Follow Joe at Joji Weber. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. Big thanks to the crew. We got Edgar Grajeda still rocking that fresh-ass haircut. And Audrey Holden over there, who had to deal with all my weird noises coming out of my body.
And big thanks to the writer this week, Connor Sullivan.
See you later.
See ya.